Hi, this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. So glad you tuned in. I'm Susie Larson. Really excited to have you joining me today. Well, if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour conversation with Craig Von Buzek. He joined me for our monthly edition of Grace and Truth, and we covered some powerful topics in the news. I always love having Craig on every single month because we look at the hot items in the news from a redemptive perspective. Some of the things we talked about were physician-assisted suicide and the situation in Houston involving subpoenas and sermons. So if you missed that first hour, I'm telling you, every time we talk with Craig, it is an engaging conversation. Trust me, you're going to want to go back to our website and hear the whole thing, myfaithradio.com. Well, in just a moment, you'll hear my conversation with Focus on the Family's Dr. Greg Smalley, and he's on with us a few times a month as well, always offering tips and tools for strong relationships, including marriage. In a moment, we're going to unpack how to win back the heart of your spouse. But first, a couple of quick announcements. There are so many resources on our website, and there are shows that are trending right now. In fact, I had Jim Cimbala on recently talking about the current storm in our culture, and how do we prepare and stand in this day. You can find that podcast on our website, myfaithradio.com. Another show, boy, once in a while, I'll interview somebody, and it sticks with me and doesn't leave me, and I keep thinking about it. Well, John Weiss was one such guest, and his book was titled Jesus Prom. In fact, I almost passed over it because I thought, is this a hip, you know, trendy title? It's nothing of the sort. That conversation about the love of Christ and how we can share the love of Christ with the people that we meet on our path every day left me so stunned. And just the way that he was raised and what his parents modeled for him about to just live out the love of Christ. I'm telling you what, I had my husband listen to that podcast, and he texted me and he said, I'm crying. And he's a big, strong man. He doesn't cry very often, but it just moved him to tears. I'm telling you what, I'd love for you to go back and catch that one. Also had Aaron Schust on just yesterday to highlight his brand new Christmas album, Unto Us. So I'm telling you, there are so many podcasts that would be a ministry to you and a ministry to friends of yours. And so take some time, and there are articles there too, myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. And with a click of a button, you can share it with a friend and be a radio missionary. Well, now we're going to talk about how to win back the heart of your spouse. So I want you to let me tell you about my guest, though he really needs no introduction, and we'll get him on the show. Dr. Greg Smalley serves as Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. He's the author of 11 books, including The DNA of Relationships, The DNA of Parent and Teen Relationships, and Wholehearted Marriage. He and his wife, Erin, live in Colorado with their three daughters, Taylor, Murphy, and Annie, and their son, Garrison. You can find his influencer page at our website at myfaithradio.com. Well, Dr. Greg, thanks so much for making time to meet with me again. So good to have you back on the show.
Hey, it is always, seriously, such an honor and privilege. I love doing this with you. I love your heart and your passion for helping people really, truly live out this life that God has called us to do. So thanks for having me.
You know, I was talking to your sweet wife, Erin, the other day, and I was thinking as we were talking, just hearing her passion and over the years knowing you and your passion, you know, just wondering, I wonder how many marriages God has used the Smalleys to save. I think that's going to be one of your great, obviously great legacies in heaven that will probably overwhelm you, Greg. When you see just the words spoken at the right time, the lines of people saying, we didn't give up because of something you said. And just really want to honor you in that because your passion for marriage is so important in this day. Well, as you know, you've been on the show so many times. We love to start out talking scripture, wondering if there's a verse that God's been speaking to you about these days.
There is, and when we think about marriage, it's probably the last place that we would go to think about a great marriage verse, but it's powerful, and I can't wait for us to unpack its significance. And it's Hosea 3:1. And listen to this. It says, the Lord said to me, so talking to Hosea, so the Lord said to Hosea, go show your love to your wife again, love her as the Lord loves the Israelites. And Susie, what's so amazing about that verse is that prior to that, so in verse 2, I think it's the only place in the entire Bible that you see God acting in the role of husband, winning back his wife, the children of Israel. And what he does, as he kind of lays out, I'm going to do this and do that, it's blows my mind that we don't really use this as a pattern, as a blueprint for how to have great marriages. It's right there, and yet I don't know why we've never really gone in and unpacked this. It's an incredible formula.
And you and I talked about this before the show. As you laid out some of these points, it is a marvel at how biblical and how effective. Once we get these unpacked, you'll see what we mean here. But you said to me the other day that you actually had to win Aaron back recently when you were on a, I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, on a trip to Japan. I just was like, shocker.
Did it surprise you?
Yeah. Sorry about that. What'd you do? I've got to know.
All right. Well, we had this amazing opportunity to go to Japan. So Tokyo, there's an American military base called Camp Zama, and they invited us to do a marriage seminar. So we're thrilled. We actually decided, hey, why don't we take maybe a week and do some vacation first? We were able to take Murphy, our 17-year-old daughter, with us. And so it's an incredible trip. So here we are in downtown Tokyo. In we're vacationing, we're on our own, we're trying to figure out, you know, how to get around, subway system, amazing city, loved our time there. But I got to tell you, it's a little nerve-wracking, you know, when you're in a foreign country trying to figure out how to get where and to there. And so we kind of mapped out some things we wanted to do this one particular day. So the girls wanted to go shopping. Well, I figured out that there's this great shopping area right next to this really cool old shrine. And so to figure out how to walk and then take a subway, all this, it distressed me out. Yeah, I like to be adventurous, but if I don't really know what I'm doing, it really stresses me out. So I say all that just to set the stage. I'm really stressed out. Okay. But I'm the only one that seems to care about going through all the details of looking up travel guides and maps and all this. So apparently that was my role. So here we are, we walk, you know, pretty far. We get to this shrine. It's gorgeous. It's in the middle of Tokyo. So you've got all these sky rise buildings surrounding you. And then there's this lush kind of park, big trees and grass. And so we're walking through it. So we head into the gate. And so Aaron and Murphy, so we've been walking for a while now. We've been there a couple of days, so we've done a whole lot of walking. So they start to go to the right. So this path in through the gate goes right and it goes left. And so I said, hey, actually, we're going left. And they went, well, right looks really good. And I said, I know, but I've worked all this out. There's actually this really cool little pond. And it's got a bridge and a little waterfall. Let's go see that. And so they said, we're tired, our feet hurt, it looks like the shrine is this way, we want to go this way. Well, that just pushed a button in me, that ticked me off. And I got mad at them, because I had done all this work to get us there, to plan this, thought it would be such a great picture spot. And so I didn't even really say anything, but I think they could tell that I was hurt and wounded because of the look on my face. And so they kind of went, fine, we'll go your way. Well, that even made me more mad, because I thought in my mind, so here's where I quickly go. So in my mind, I go, what's the deal? You guys, you know, I'm not saying any of this out loud, right? Susie, you know, right, those moments where you're just thinking a lot of things. So I'm thinking, you guys, I'm doing all the work to get us around. I have to take hours to figure out where we are. This is stressful enough. I've spent hours standing while you guys have been shopping, and you can't go to a little pond for me? That was kind of my thought process. So very full of righteous indignation that they should be honoring me, and they should be going where I'm wanting us to go, because I'm the leader. I have all the information. And so I get ticked. And so remember, they wanted to go right originally. So I just head right, assuming that My wife and daughter will follow me, especially because they don't know where we're at. But what do?
They're strong women, Greg.
Exactly. You know, it wouldn't be a bad thing for you to remind me of that. Like when I go on trips, just send me a little text. Remember, you have strong women.
Of all
women.
The girls in your family, those are the two strongest probably, right?
Seriously. Yeah. They're all strong because I can tell you, Taylor and Annie. Anyway.
That's true.
So they had left where I originally wanted to go. Well, I go right. And I kind of, you know, did a quick little check, assuming that they'll finally go, all right, we'll follow him. They never did. So now we're separated. And I probably, in hindsight, should not have left them. But now I'm mad. Now I just want to make a point. Now I want to teach them natural consequences. If you're in a foreign country and you don't know where you're at, you should probably follow the guide. Well, let's just say that didn't work out well. I double back to find them, you know, and they're not there. I lose them. And here we are at this gorgeous place. And I'm mad. They're, you know, I don't know what's going on for them. Well, I finally found them like a half an hour later at the shrine. They've already gone through it. Now I've done none of it. And so we get into this argument. You know, we're tired. I mean, think it's like 18 hours difference.
International travel already just kind of taps out the nerves, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I had no little Debbies there to hold me over for till lunch. And so all that to say, so we get in this big argument and it's at one point. So I still believe that I have been wronged. Like I was in the right. Do you ever do that with Kevin to where you're just convinced that, okay, when are you going to apologize? Because I just kind of stood there with this probably smug little look on my face. And they
weren't seeing it?
No, not really at all. And it was they. So at one point, sweet Murphy, my 17-year-old, she just said, you know, she goes, Dad, I love you, but sometimes you do things that are wrong.
Wow.
And I just stood there fuming, going, there's so much that I want to say right now. But I just thought in my mind, you know what? All right. We're just about to do a marriage seminar. Why don't I use some of these skills that I apparently tell other people that work? Why don't I put them into action? And so we stood outside this gorgeous shrine and worked all this out. But it was in that moment that I was faced with, I need to win back both my wife and my daughter. And I'm telling you, here in Hosea, if you find yourself, so let's say that you're maybe in a season of crisis, maybe you're in a season to where, you know, you're not sure if your marriage is going to make it. Maybe you're in a season that's just ho-hum, kind of just floating along with one another. Not great, not bad, just there. Or like me, maybe you made a mistake and it's time you make things right. Telling you what, go to Hosea 2, starting at verse 14, and you will see where God lays out this incredible formula for winning back your spouse. So that's what
great.
I love about this passage.
That's such a good story, and I'm so excited to unpack this. But I got to think about the person listening, who's listening to your story, who still thinks you're right and thinks I
good.
Don't get it. You know?
Write me, and I'll yes, show that to my wife and daughter.
Not for this
Thank
purpose,
you.
But I'm just saying, you make a really good point here, though. Let's just say, you know, because that could go either way, that story, right? So somebody listening going, I'm still ticked off because if I did all that work and felt like, you know, that was not a win for you, you're still winning back your wife and your daughter. And so we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want you first to speak to that person because I think it took some humility for you, thinking you're probably still right, to win them back. And because there are scenarios where you might be right, but the relationship is off, and so you need to take that first step. I'm talking to Dr. Greg Smalley today, talking about winning back the heart of your spouse. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Let them see you in me. Let them hear you when I speak. Let them feel you when I sing. Let them see you in me.
I found that when I really make big mistakes, it takes like a grand gesture to prove that I know that I made a mistake and I know that I need to change, and this is the first step into changing.
Another breath, a grain of sand, passing quickly through your hand. I give my life and offer it. Take it all, take everything. Let them see us.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my good friend Dr. Greg Smalley about something really important, something that we can tend to neglect when we get too busy with life, and that's winning back the heart of your spouse. Maybe you think things are fine, but their heart is closing. And so we're going to unpack some steps from Scripture about a way that we can truly win back the heart of our spouse. And Greg, before the break, you were telling a story about you and Aaron and your daughter Murphy in Japan, where you guys had a falling out of sorts. But as I'm listening to the story, I was thinking, you know, you kind of came to a place feeling like, I've maybe done something wrong here. I need to win back the spouse. But I'm thinking as I was listening that others listening might think, no, they were in the wrong, but you still wanted to build the bridge and win back your spouse. So first, with the person in mind listening who thinks that maybe you didn't do something wrong and you were legitimate in your frustration, speak to them in light of this story.
Yeah, it's a great question, because I was thinking that same way too, because I was standing there thinking, what did I do? You know, they're the ones that didn't follow me, and la 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 la. I've been the one standing around while they've been shopping. They could have gone to to this place that I wanted to see. Yeah, all that true. Yeah. Try to argue that one out and see what happens, first of all. If you really want to have fun. You know, I mean, honestly, where does that get us? But here's how I want to answer your question. I think two things hit me. One is that, Susie, you and I talked a lot about this for the year and a half that we did Everyday Relationships together. And the idea was that the wrong question is, how do I have a better marriage? The right question is always, how do I be a better spouse? So in that moment, sure, I could, you know, I it was very easy for me to look at it from my hurt, from my perspective, and go, well, okay, even if I was wrong, they were wrong too. Why, you know, why am I the one having to start the whatever? You know what? I can't control Aaron. I can't choose for her what she should do in those moments, but that's not what God's called me to do. So God has called me to love my wife as Christ loved the church. He died for the church. He sacrificed. He served the church. That's my job. And second of all, you know, I look here at Hosea. So God did nothing wrong, right? I mean, God doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't sin. He doesn't err. So in this situation, as the husband, he had done nothing wrong. And yet, when his wife, the Israelites, were unfaithful to him, here you see that in spite of all that, what does he do? He begins to pursue her. He goes to win her back. It didn't matter who did what. But the fact is that, hey, if I want a model of how I need to show up as a spouse, so for me as a husband, man, right there, you see that it didn't matter how he was wrong. It didn't matter that it was 100% her fault. He chose to win her back. And that's why I just say, you know what? In my marriage matters more than being right.
That is so good. I'm sitting here thinking, you know, we so often land on who's right, who's wrong. And as you're talking, and I'm thinking, you're so right. God didn't do anything wrong, but he did what was righteous. And that needs to be our question, right? Not who's right, but what's the righteous thing to do? Am I committed to this marriage? So do I really want to die on this hill? And I'm so glad you answered that, because so right or who was right or wrong is almost beside the point. It's getting back to unity. Yeah.
I mean, I think at some point when unity has been restored, hearts have been opened, I think there's value in maybe going back through if there's something that was happening that really, really, truly felt like a loss for you. But in the beginning, I think we need to err on the side of fighting for our marriage, fighting for our spouse. And don't look at it as, well, now I have to be the one to give up. I'm the one losing. I mean, if that's how you want to see it, then you've got bigger issues to deal with. You know, like in Hebrews 13:4, that it says that marriage should be honored by all. And I think a part of how that we can honor a marriage on a daily basis is choosing to fight for it. Even when I feel so wronged, even when I feel that I have been treated unjustly, unfair, look how I've been wounded, look what my spouse is doing. You know what? It's not that it doesn't matter. It's that what can I choose to do? And in this case, I want to choose to honor my marriage by looking at what God did and how he won back his wife. And it's what he did, that's what I had to begin to put into place there in Tokyo, standing next to the shrine.
Well, before we get into these 5 points that you've drawn out of Hosea, I want to know, how did you win them back? What were your first steps then as you're standing there frustrated? Because for one, Greg, you have to take sides against yourself, against your emotions almost, to go, okay, my emotions want to feel this way, but I'm going to almost put those aside, so to speak, and do the right thing. So how did you navigate that?
Susie, that's it. And that's way easier in theory than actually to put that into practice. But I think that our model, where we look at Christ in how he gave up, he died to self, that it's in those moments where that we feel so justified in our wounds, in our hurt, in our frustration, in our anger, whatever that might look like for you, that there has to be a moment in time to where I humble myself, and I give that up. I release that, and I say, in spite of all these things, what can I do to win back this relationship? What can I do to restore harmony, to restore unity? Because we have an adversary who will go at us in those moments, and he messes with our mind. He puts these crazy thoughts. Susie, as I was off on my own, wandering around this park, you know, Aaron and Murphy are nowhere to be found. It's just amazing to me how quickly I go to some pretty catastrophic kind of thinking about my wife, about my daughter, and that's the spiritual warfare.
And so I
think we've got to be aware of that, and just, you know, go, you know what? I'm going to fight for this and humble myself and to take that first step. And again, it's right there in Hosea 2 that we find some good places. And that's why I think it's so interesting to see what God does is sort of his first step. I think it's fascinating.
It is fascinating. And I remember talking with Erin on a different interview, and her saying one day when she could have lashed out and said, Greg, you're not connecting with me, you're busy. But she said, and I could have said that, but I decided to ask him instead, let's go for a walk. And so here I see just two examples of both of you going, I could have defaulted to selfishness, but I defaulted to righteousness. And I just think that is so key for us, because Dr. Gary Chapman says the greatest downfall of most marriages is selfishness. And so, yeah, as you say, the adversary cuts through and tries to get us to go to that place of selfishness.
Well, and that's our default, right?
It's our default, yeah, absolutely. But God in his grace will help us go towards love. And I think as we love our spouses, we become more Christ-like ourselves. But we need to take a quick and short break, talking to my friend Dr. Greg Smalley about such important stuff, really walking in love and marriage in the midst of conflict, which you will have. I'm going to draw from content from Fight Your Way to a Better Marriage, fantastic book. We're going to talk about the points that Greg has pulled out of Hosea when we come back. Don't go away. More with Dr. Greg Smalley in just a moment.
Well, since I just got married in May, I haven't lost it yet, so I haven't been there. Now, on the other hand, if he lost me, I know my love languages are gifts and affirmation, so that works out really well for me.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my good friend, Dr. Greg Smalley, about winning back your spouse, about cultivating love, and even unselfishness in the face of conflict. Our default response is selfishness, of defending ourselves. But really, God calls us to something higher. And before the break, you were telling a story about Japan and just a conflict and how God really just nudged you, in spite of how you were feeling, Greg, to win back the heart of your dear wife and daughter. And so you were talking about points that you found in Hosea that you actually teach at marriage seminars. So let's take them one by one. First one is to tenderly allure. And this example comes from God, who did no wrong, but he wins back the heart of Israel. So talk about that and what we can learn from Scripture.
Yeah, so go to Hosea 2, verse 14. This is where God begins to win back his wife. And he says, therefore, I am now going to allure her. And the word, that to me is a fascinating word. You think of like a fisherman, you know, with a lure on the end of their line.
I think of flowers. I don't think of bait, but anyway.
I love to fish, so that's right where I go. But think about it. So a fisherman will cast this lure shiny to get what? Why is he doing that? He's trying to get the attention of this fish. He's trying to get that fish to turn towards him. So here God and his wife, the Israelites, have been disconnected. She has turned away from him. Her attention now is on to other gods, Baal. And so now it's like he's standing there waving his hands, whistling, trying to get her attention. So see, he's pursuing her. And that's what's significant is he takes the first step. He's wanting to do something to get her attention. And what he does is he says that I will lead her into the desert. What's significant about that is, see, the desert is where they first fell in love. So he's getting her off alone. He's led her off to sort of the side, to away from Baal, away from these other suitors. And now he says that I will speak tenderly to her. And I think that is such a great model. So for me, when Aaron and I and Murphy, so the girls are mad at me. I felt that they should have followed me. They felt that I should have not left them, which is probably true anyway. So what I chose to go first. And so I asked them, can you guys step over here? Can we quit walking? They were walking away from me because they're so mad. So I'm now trying to get their attention. I'm pursuing them by saying, hey, can you come over here to the side and let's talk? What I had to do, though, is do what God did and make a choice to be tender. See, it would have been very easy for me to debate this, to say, why would you guys walk away from me here in a foreign country? You don't know where you're at. Why would that even make sense? I'm the leader. You guys have given me that responsibility, and it's your job to follow. It's like one of my very pet peeves in life is when someone is following me in the car. I always tell them, listen, I'm setting the pace and the speed. Your job is to stay right on my tail. Mm-hmm. And that in my mind applied here. You guys, I was the leader. You should have fought anyway. But do you see how I had to then become tender? And so I brought them over to the side and I said, let's figure this out. I don't want to keep going. I have no interest in just walking in silence and you guys ahead of me. Let's figure this out. And so I think that's such a key thing. So here, God, to allure his wife, to get her attention, he uses tenderness. So the question for you is, how do you get your spouse's attention? So whatever season you're in, maybe you're in crisis, maybe you're just in a, you know, we're just kind of floating along. But the question for you is, what will you do to allure? So, Susie, let me put you on the spot. So, to get Kevin's attention, beyond the obvious, all right, how would you allure him? How would you get him to turn towards you, begin to lean in towards you kind of relationally? What have you found that has worked?
Well, you know, in our empty nest season that we're in, a year ago, we moved to a lake, and so we live on a bay, and we actually have a pontoon that we purchased for very cheap from the previous owner, and because he is a workhorse and he drives like a freight train at times, he just does, and he would admit that. He says, since we moved there, just looking out the window and seeing water, he says, just does something for his soul. And so what I would do in this season, in this particular context, I know not everybody has that wonderful blessing, but right now, I'm able to just say, can we turn our computers off and go out for a boat ride? And we take our dog and we go down and hop on the boat and just tool around the bay. And then I say, tell me about your day. And I just watch his whole countenance rest. I think that's the most effective thing I can do for him.
See, and I love that. And that's a great example to lure him. You get him out on the pontoon boat, which would, that would totally work for me as well. I love being on the water. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for others, I don't know. That's
and
what
maybe even
you get
not
to
doing the things that, that diminish him. You know what I mean? Like go on a fast from your tendency to nag or whatever that is. And, Greg, I can't tell you how many young women I've told where they've complained that their husband's not the spiritual leader and that he won't pray for them or with them. And I just say, you know what? Before he goes out the door, put your hand on his shoulder and thank God by faith, not only for the man he is, but for the man he will be. Thank you, Lord, that he goes to work every day. Thank you that he loves us. I mean, what that would do for him, it's like, don't wait and complain and get mad that he's not praying with you. Pray for him and let him hear you. Not in a manipulative way, but really in a way to say, one of us is going to go, I'll start. And to do that with a pure heart, I think will go so far, don't you think?
Oh, I agree. And that's, to me, which is so significant. So God is laying out a great formula. So the first thing he does is he gets her attention and then uses something to allure her, to draw her in. And for him, it was tenderness. And so, hey, if that worked, if that was good enough for God, it might be important for us. There's something powerful when we become tender. I mean, we know that a gentle answer, you know, turns away wrath. And so for me, you know, here in the middle of, you know, Tokyo, for me to begin to soften, to humble myself, I had to go first. I mean, that's a bad way to say it. I chose, but I still felt like, why am I the one doing this? But still, you don't have to feel great about this. Just do it.
Okay, and before we go to the second point, I got to ask you about that, because it is like going up over a hill to take sides against yourself. Like, that's the only way I can think of saying it, where it's like my default want and the gravity of my nature is to go, you go first, you were wrong, whatever, you know what I mean? But for to take sides against ourselves and say, one of us has to go, and I'm feeling I got to do this. I got to take the step. Once you took the step, did you sense a grace in it, or was it just grinding your gears until they responded? I mean, how did you feel at that moment?
Reality is that it doesn't ever go perfect. They were mad at me, so they really didn't want to talk. It was awkward, which
made me. And so the temptation would be to go, "Hey, dude, I went first. You're supposed to respond."
Exactly. So I'm standing there going, "Okay, so not only did you guys leave me, but now I'm offering the peace branch." And you got, now what? Now you're going to pretend you're even more mad. I mean, that's the spiritual warfare. We've got an enemy that's right there. He does not want restoration. He does not want unity. And so he's going to continue to feed me lines in my mind. And, you know, I say it, none of it matters, because what is the alternative? Right. The alternative was what? For me to stay mad and wander around Tokyo in silence? I mean, I don't want to do that. That wasn't going to get us anywhere.
When you think about these points, because the next one is safety, again, you think about the warfare and you think about the roadmap. So the first one is to tenderly allure. Okay, so let's say they react, even, you know, dig their heels in, and the temptation would then be to go to default defending yourself. But if you look at that next step, safety, if we defend ourselves in a fight to the point, you know, where we're just building a case against each other, safety breaks down. So you can see why the enemy would make that seem totally enticing. Do you know what
I'm
saying?
It's very,
like, because
much so.
It feeds your flesh so much, but it totally flies in the face of creating safety. I think if we could memorize these points that you're laying out, that would help us so much. So speak safety, especially in the context of this fight, where all of a sudden you're not getting the response you wanted, but safety is also a piece of that equation.
Yeah, he says that I will make for you a covenant on that day with the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the creeping things on the ground. I will abolish the bow and the sword and the war from the land, and I will make you lie down in safety. What he's doing is that he's saying, I want you to feel safe with me right now. But he's wanting her heart open to him. That's why he's been tender. That's why he's led her in the desert to remind her of where they fell in love. See, he wants her heart open. In that day, I wanted the heart of my wife and my daughter back open to me. That's intimacy, connection, open hearts. And so he's saying, hey, this marriage is going to feel so safe to you. As a matter of fact, that the animals won't bug you. I will get rid of the war. What he's saying is that all the unhealthy way maybe that we've battled, I'm going to get rid of all that. Not that he's getting rid of conflict and disagreement. See, conflict is good for marriage. Susie, we've talked about that many times. Combat, war, is bad. And so he's differentiating between these. He's saying, I'm going to get rid of the sword and the bow and the war, and then you will lie down in safety. Mm. He's doing every bit of that to get her heart open. And as a matter of fact, the next verse, he says, and then you will sing as in the days of your youth. In other words, once she's being pursued, he's got her attention, he creates a safe spot for her. Now her heart opens because she's singing. So in that moment with Murphy and Aaron, I had to figure out, okay, how do I make this feel safe for them? Because right now, I mean, it didn't feel safe for them. I mean, they had their own perceptions. They had their own experience. Hey, I left them to make a point in a foreign country. Okay, that certainly could not have communicated safety to my wife and daughter. It was, that's not who I want to be. You know, I did it because I was reacting. I was mad. I was hurt. I was shut down. I mean, all those things. But the bottom line is, see, is that I could own that. And what's significant is, see, the third point that God does right from there. So he's kind of settled everybody down and saying that this is going to feel safe. And by the way, I think for us practically then is to go, what can I do to create physical, emotional, and spiritual safety within my relationship? And so for me in that moment, see, the physical safety was, I'm not going to leave you. Okay. I've brought you guys over kind of away from everybody else. Now, again, no one's, you know, they weren't speaking English, so we were okay. They weren't hearing, hey, isn't that marriage guy, you know, yelling at his wife and daughter, you know, that's what you have to figure out. What can I do in this moment? If you want your wife's heart open, if you want your husband's heart open, you've got to figure out how to make it safe. And then God, the third thing that he does, and this is so cool, is that he restores then their relationship. He says this, that in that day, says the Lord, that you will call upon me, you will call me my husband, and you will no longer call me my Baal. Now, that might not mean anything to anybody, But Baal is used throughout the scriptures as a way to describe a master, a cruel master. That's what a Baal was. It was a foreign god, and the only way that you could get the benefits, you had to hurt yourself and whip yourself. And so he's saying, I don't want you to look at me as your Baal, your cruel master. I want you to look at me as your husband. And what he's doing right there is that, see, he's giving up the hurt. He's giving up getting back. He's giving up, you know, whatever she should have done to make this thing right, and he forgives her. And that's significant. And that's why for me in that moment, I had to in my mind go, you know what? Man, I love my wife. I love my daughter. You know what? Rather they admit to it or not, rather they own what they did, rather they say, you know, you have stood by why we shopped a lot, you know, this was important to you, and we should have followed you. Rather, it didn't matter at that point for me if they made it right with me, that I chose to say, you know what, I forgive all that. I love you guys more than getting my way in or being right. And so what do you need to forgive your spouse for? Maybe it's something big. Maybe it's little, like you just got into an argument or something. But whatever it is, see, we can always choose to forgive.
Boy, that's such an important point, Greg, when you think about the things that build up and add up and that how they contribute to our hearts just shutting down in marriage. So you think about these first three things, to allure, to create safety, and to even help restore something maybe that you yourself took away. Think about this, tenderly allure, to create a safe place, and to even restore maybe things that were taken in years gone by. Talking to Dr. Greg Smalley, we're taking a quick break. When we come back, we'll cover the final 2 points that Greg drew out of Hosea, just a wonderful roadmap for creating a marriage as a beautiful, safe place, and even winning back your spouse. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
If I wanted to win back the heart of my hubby, I would take time to make a wonderful meal so when he got home, we could spend some quality time together.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Dr. Greg Smalley about just having a great conversation about how to win back the heart of your spouse. If you've just tuned in, you're going to want to catch the whole podcast up on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. So, Greg, we've been walking through these 5 points that you really gleaned from Hosea, verse in Hosea. And the first three were tenderly allure, safety, creating a safe place in marriage, helping to restore partially by forgiving, but also just paying attention to things that were lost maybe through our selfish acts towards each other. How can we restore? And what's the fourth one?
Here's where God says, and I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you to me in righteousness and justice and steadfast love and mercy, and I will betroth you to me in faithfulness. Looking at that, again, my question is, well, what on earth does that have to do with winning back his wife? And now, after studying it carefully, I get it. See, what he's doing is he's saying that I want to betroth you. In other words, I don't want to just keep going on like this never happened. I don't want to just play like it didn't happen and we just move on. I don't want to go back in to the way things were. What he's saying is, I want to go all the way back to the beginning, like we were first dating and when we were first engaged to each other, and I want to rebuild our marriage from that spot. What he's doing is that he's saying, what are core values that need to be a part of our foundation? And he lists them. You know, he talks about righteousness and justice and steadfast love and mercy. So the question for us, then, I think it's a great thing, because our marriage moves through seasons. And I think it's important that we, you know, once a year, take stock. What is important for us to create as the foundation of our marriage for this year that will help us get to where we want to be? I think that's the takeaway. So he's opened her heart back up by pursuing her, by creating safety, by giving back her vineyards, things that he had taken away. So I've forgiven you. I've given you back. Now I want to really even take it deeper. Let's lay a fresh new foundation. So, like with Aaron in Murphy. So here we are in this place in Tokyo, and we've just had this big fight. And so what I said to them, I said, all right, I forgive you guys. What happened happened. What do we want to learn from this? What are we doing differently? And so, of course, they said, well, how about this? How about whatever happens, that even if we're mad at you, you don't leave us? And I said, that's fair. I can agree to that. And I said, how about for me, what would be important is just to notice that we're doing a lot of shopping. We're doing a lot of the stuff that you guys want to do. Let me be more clear. If something's really important to me, then I'll be sure that I tell you this is what now is important to me. And they said, we love that, because we didn't even really get that this was important. And so the point being, we made some changes. And now we're not only reconnected, hearts are open. We've established some, again, I'm making, you know, what God did laying a fresh foundation was different than me, but in the same, there's a similarity there that we then created some new rules going forward. And now we're feeling great. The last thing that God does, and this is where we were set up now, is that he says that you will know the Lord in that day. I will respond, declares the Lord. I will respond to the skies, and they will respond to the earth, and the earth will respond to the grain. In other words, what he's saying is that I want to know you. So he's telling his wife, I want to know you, but I want you to know me. And that, to me, is one of the best pictures of intimacy, to know and be known. To know means that I want to listen to you, that I want to understand you, I want to be curious, I want to find out what's going on for you. And to be known means that I'm then also willing to share what's going on for me. And so as Murphy and Aaron and I, you know, now we felt very restored. You know, we're smiling at each other, we're kind of joking. Now we started laughing about, you know, just the ridiculousness of what just went on. We just started talking again. We just started sharing. We just started goofing around. I mean, we were able to, the three of us, go to a very intimate place, you know, a dad to a daughter, a husband to a wife. I mean, it was great. And we ended that day, I think, closer than we would have been had that not happened. That's what I love about problems in a marriage, conflict in a marriage, is that it really can, if you choose to do this differently, it really can take you to a new level of connection. And that's what I experienced. I learned some things about my daughter. I learned that a button for her is when she feels abandoned. And that's how she felt by me, right or wrong, literal or not, didn't matter. That's how she felt. I learned about my wife that, again, that she hates to feel controlled and to be left. So that was very similar. They also learned, you know, about me, and we learned about our relationship. And so not only were we now restored and connected, we now learned something that we were able to take forward. And that's what, Susie, can happen when we face problems.
And you were richer on the other side of that conflict, Greg. I'm thinking, you know, these marriage intensive you and Aaron have done with marriages that were on the brink of absolute, you know, divorce and blowing up. And one of the things that you help them to do is to know each other, to reset a new foundation. And you're, you know, not just building out of the rubble, but building something new.
Yeah. The rubble.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And yet, on a smaller scale, this fight in Tokyo, I think we could take that idea in the smallest fights, in the biggest conflicts, and even when marriage is on life support, to reset and to know and be known. Because here was a reset. You guys learned something new about each other, which you always say, stay curious with each other. But I'm also thinking of that marriage that's really on the brink of divorce, that it is possible if they retrace their steps and they walk through these, you know, these things where they are willing to allure each other, willing to create a safe place to restore, to give back, to renew their marriage, and then to make it an aim to say, you're of somebody of such great worth. I do want to know you. You're someone who's in God's image. I do want to know you. Talk to that couple, maybe. And sometimes you can't do that without help. Sometimes you need a marriage intensive. In fact, Focus, you guys are doing those now, aren't you?
We are. Yeah. Go to focusonthefamily.com/marriage, and you can find out if you need to go to a marriage ER, you need that kind of help, then we've got that. But Susie, I would say, you know, all of this, go back to the verse that we started with, and that Hosea 3:1, where the Lord said, so wherever you're at, again, it's not what your spouse can do differently. It's God is saying, go, show your love to your wife again. It wasn't, you know, I know, Hosea, you've been really wronged, and she really should step up. He didn't say any of that. He called Hosea to, no matter what, you show your love, you pursue her, you do. He said, and love her as the Lord loved. So he's saying, I just laid out everything I did that worked for me. Now you go do the same. And that's the hope that we have, that the God of this universe, who's perfect, who knows everything, gave us a great formula. Study that. Hosea 2:14-23. Every married couple should memorize this formula, because, again, it's worked for God, and that's good enough for me.
Indeed. Wondering if you would pray for that couple who is in a habit and a pattern of defaulting to winning the battle at the expense of the heart.
God, I pray that you recapture our hearts first and foremost, Lord. We won't do this if our hearts are closed, if our hearts are hardened. So, Lord, just soften the hardened heart right now, Lord. Just get some cracks in there that we can rend our heart fully open to you. And then, like you say, Lord, then give us the strength to go and show our love to others, Lord, that we learn how to love like you loved the Israelites. Lord, it's right there. The formula's there, Lord. Show us, teach us, model, grow us in our relationships. Lord, we're just so grateful. We ask these things in your precious name. Amen.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. You can find this whole program at our website, myfaithradio.com, on the Live the Promise show page. You'll also see the scriptures referenced, the music featured, and a link to our guest materials. Just a reminder, we love to hear from you. If you were strengthened or challenged by a program you heard, let us know. You can email me through the Live the Promise page with a question, a comment, or even a suggestion for a future show topic. We do pray for you by name on a weekly basis and love hearing how God uses Faith Radio in your daily life. Well, finally, guess what? The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. And He is the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.